Welcome to the Ecology and Research Channel. Green issues, ecology, incredibly important to embodiment. Obviously, we're embodied in place, we're embodied in a world. How we treat ourselves is how we treat the planet and vice versa. So this is super important, I think, for our whole planet. Research relates to this. We've sort of put two together there. We didn't quite know where to put research, so we put them in with ecology. This stage has lots of great speakers, people I personally enjoy, and it's sponsored by Forests Without Frontiers. So rather than sell a sponsorship for this channel, we decided, you know what, let's give it away to a green charity. Tree planting seemed a good one. We thought we can all get behind that. We all breathe air. We looked into a load, actually. Some of them are quite famous, but don't actually plant a lot of trees, weirdly, or other things aren't so good with them. This one, Forests Without Frontiers, really does the work. They're in charge of a really big reforestation project in Central Europe, but, you know, we're all breathing it, thank you. It's run by Nicoletta, a very cool lady, and just a cool organization that really does the work. The money goes, you know, efficiently to actually planting trees. I'm happy to be supporting them. For me, it was like, you know, when we were looking at our charities to support, a green one just made a lot of sense to me. That just was obvious. Please do support them. Links below. As well as that, enjoy the whole channel. There's so much richness in this topic.
So I want to pick up with that quote that we just heard from Thich Nhat Hanh, who's a Buddhist monk and lifelong peace activist. And he said the purpose, the whole purpose of our existence is to awaken from our illusion of separateness. The question, of course, is how do we do that? It's vital, but that's something that's been going through this whole conference, I feel. People have been addressing this from different dimensions. My answer, I believe that this comes from the wisdom of the body. We all have a deep embodied knowing that we are not actually separate, but we're a part of the web of the whole of life. So in this presentation, I'm hoping to weave together some of the threads of this whole conference. I'll be picking up on various presenters that I've seen or that have been on the program. So taking those and trying to weave them together into a tapestry that I'm hoping makes sense of a bigger picture. There's two key themes, certainly within our channel: connection and embodied knowing. Those two are going to be absolutely fundamental as I go through this presentation. I'll also be showing how many of the core practices that have been explored at this event have something very special in common. They're all pathways to deeper connection. So let's leap in. Let's rewind a little bit to where this all kicked off for me. So over a quarter of a century ago, I made my very first conference presentation and it completely changed my life. I was talking about the power of embodied knowing in ritual. And the conference organizer came over to me afterwards and he said, would you like to do a PhD to explore this subject in depth? I'll come on to what happened later, but that presentation, which was entitled Sacred Ecology, and it is available online, it set the stage for everything that's to come. And I want to read you one of the key insights from it that I think still, even 25 years later, still resonates for me. I can pop this in the chat box in a moment. Besides the cerebral knowledge we all possess, the words and ideas stored in our heads, there is a deeper knowledge held within the tissue of our bodies. It is a somatic, physical knowing, which comes from direct experience. This is the knowledge of faith, of emotion, of the gut feeling. So I'll give you a link to that. That presentation later, called Sacred Ecology. It's been published a couple of times and I've got it available on the web. So as I say, I was invited to do a PhD and of course I took that opportunity. And when I looked at embodied knowing, I thought it was going to be something quite marginal. Oh, this is this thing called embodied knowing. It actually turned out to be huge and way more complex and far more significant than I ever imagined. I would actually claim that embodied knowing is significantly more important than the kind of sort of cognitive knowing that we have up here. I was on a panel earlier this week about embodied knowing. So I'm immediately starting to reference some of the things that have gone on through the conference. If you want to find out more about what embodied knowing is, you can check that one out, a panel on embodied knowing. But the essence of it is, I quite often use the example of, Paris, right? I know Paris is the capital of France. Now that knowing, it's up here, it's in the conscious awareness, and it's called explicit knowing, sometimes called explicit knowing. Now, if you said to me, "So, Adrian, how do you feel about Paris? Can you tell me how I get to that little cafe that's just down on the South Bank?" I'm then going to be going into something else. I'm going into embodied knowing, something else. Something's about moving through place. Something's about something other than that explicit knowing that Paris is the capital of France. There's a lot more stuff about embodied knowing, but I just wanted to give you a sense of where we're going with this and what this kind of thing is that I'm talking about. So my PhD, I was researching embodied knowing amongst a particular group of eco-activists who have a nature-based spirituality, which I would call eco-paganism. Just for the sake of transparency, I'm an eco-pagan. So it's about it's honoring nature and this sense that I am an environmental activist because of a spiritual sense of connectedness with the natural world. And that's kind of where it comes from. And that's an embodied knowing. So let's get back to the PhD. So when I was spending a lot of time on road protest camps and living with eco-pagans and engaging in what we were all doing things together, I found there's certain practices that both supported and inspired their activism. And just to give you a sense, some of you maybe have done some environmental activism or activism of any kind, it's really hard work, right? During the ethnography I was doing, we were camping out and living in tree houses during the coldest winter in about a decade. It's pretty tough. And you need something to sustain you through that. You need something that's going to kind of inspire you and keep you going when times are hard. And what those activists and myself were doing, we were drawing on a number of practices that allowed us to access that embodied knowing that I identified in sacred ecology. It's a wisdom of the body that reveals the reality that we've heard repeated in many, many presentations during this conference. We are not the isolated individuals that we habitually think we are. In fact, we're part of a web of wider interactions. So, the PhD is online. Again, it's all out there. So if you want to know more, I can give you the links to that. PhD finishes. Years later, I decide to become a psychotherapist. And during the training, and more especially when I'm practicing, I made what was initially to me quite a curious discovery. Those practices that I identified amongst the environmental activists were all absolutely fundamental therapeutic approaches. I was a bit kind of like, well, that's weird. But then when you think about it, it's not surprising at all, because all these practices are pathways to deeper connection, which is, of course, powerfully therapeutic. Now, before I go on, I want to clarify what I'm talking about. So there's two levels of connection going on. And this will become clearer as we go through. So there's the mind and the body, okay, which hopefully you all are well aware are part of a complete synthesis. Now, what's important is that we can connect what we know up here, the kind of the, the explicit knowing with the embodied knowing. Absolutely vital that we can do that, especially in a therapeutic context. The number of times I've been with a client and they've gone, oh, wow, they get this moment of, oh, wow, oh, I get that. I now understand it here. I get it here. They suddenly understand in their body something that they hadn't got before, or they just knew it in their explicit awareness. And that's where the healing comes. It's a transformational moment. So there's this connection. First connection is between the explicit awareness and this embodied knowing, and that's hugely powerful. The second level of connection is between this, which there's a guy called Andy Clark. He's a philosopher who draws a lot on neuroscience. He calls this the skin bag body, which I think is rather lovely. So the skin bag body isn't isolated. It's connected to everything around us. And I'll come on to that in a little bit more detail later. So that's the second level of connection. And that's where this comes back to the Thich Nhat Hanh quote about us being connected to everything else, that we're not separate. So I'm going to just list for you the embodied pathways of connection. You'll know most of them, possibly all of them, but I'm going to talk a little bit about each of them as we go through. So there's nature connection. Okay, that's the one that's probably inspired me the most. Sometimes it's talked about in terms of what's called the wilderness effect, and I'll touch on that later. The wilderness effect is that's what happens to you when you go out and you spend a week trekking in the wilderness. Something happens to people's consciousness when they do that, and it has all sorts of extraordinarily powerful impacts on them, quite transformational. But that happens even if you spend time going to the park at a lower level. And again, I'm going to reference another panel. In fact, there's lots on this and this channel, but the one that's coming to mind now is a panel about nature connectedness that explicitly talks about this. So you can look all these up later and expand and begin to follow some of these threads that I'm introducing you to. Number three, mindfulness. Okay, mindfulness has just been massive for me, and I would guess for a lot of you it's been hugely important. We had a talk from John Danvers yesterday on this channel talking about mindfulness, and I'm going to have a quote from him later on that brings out how mindfulness can shift our consciousness and our awareness and let us sense into that sense of not being separate. Number four, ritual. Well, this was where I came in, of course. Ritual was where I first, something was, wow, I know something after that ritual that I didn't know before, but I don't know it here. I kind of know it here. That's curious. That's where I came in. That's where I kicked off this whole adventure. And there have been several speakers speaking about ritual. We had a ritual about a speaker talking about the 9-year ritual that they'd done. And my guess is other channels have had people talking about ritual. So it's huge, which was a hugely powerful epoch. Dance. Wow, we've got a whole channel on dance. We've had several speakers in this channel talking about dance. And it's, again, a powerful way of connecting, not only with from here to here, but outwards into what is around as well. And finally, last but by no means least, psychedelics. Psychedelics, I have had experience of using ayahuasca. I have had experience of using psilocybin before, unfortunately, became designated as a Class A drug in this country, something that I'm hoping will change. Psychedelics, hugely powerful pathway of connection. probably arguably the most powerful, but we'll touch on that later. They all differ. They all have their different qualities. So those are the core ones, but there's two more embodied pathways that are especially important. I call these the gateway epoch. And they're gateway epoch because if you don't have them, none of the others are going to quite land properly. You won't really be able to get into the other ones unless you start with these in some way at least. Number one, centering. I'm hoping all of you are really, really familiar with centering. Mark Walsh, who's the guy who's kind of brought this whole thing together, written a lot about centering. Paul Linden is also excellent on centering. It's really just about what I just did before I started this talk. Just bringing yourself to a centered place, going, okay, take a breath, check in with yourself, relax down the core of your body, become present. And you can do that very quickly if you know how to, and it's a core skill. But if you're not centered and you go off and try and do some dance or you go walking in nature or you do any of the others, you're not going to quite be there. So centering comes before. It's a gateway in. Centering also acts as an epoch in its own right. The second gateway epoch is sensuous experience. So if you are not allowing yourself to sense into what's happening when you're dancing or when you're being mindful or in nature or taking psychedelics or whatever else it is, it's not going to quite work. So sensuous experience and centering are very, very important epochs in the sense that they're kind of, it's almost like that's where the gate opens and takes you in on the journey along the pathways of connection. So I'm going to give you a bit of a sense of one of these right now. I mean, I'm sure you, hopefully all of you have had experiences of at least one of those. The one that you're probably least familiar with is focusing. So I'm just going to spend a little bit of time. I want you to right here, right now, have a sense of what happens when an embodied pathway of connection is going on. So you've got that immediate experience to pull on as I'm getting into the more technical stuff. Because I'm going to try and explain to you from a more academic angle what I think is happening. So before we do that, we're going to spend some time focusing together. Now, just briefly, focusing, it's actually a completely natural experience. It's something we all do, but I think most of us have forgotten how to. It was brought forth and really kind of made, brought to the world by one of people I admire most, philosopher and psychotherapist, Eugene Gendlin. If anyone is my guru, it's Eugene Gendlin, absolute genius. So what Gendlin found in his research was that in psychotherapy, the way the healing happens is people are able to connect down into their embodied knowing effectively, as I was saying earlier, and they can sense into the body and just be curious about what's there. So I'm just going to guide you into that and just give you a taste of focusing. So if you're familiar with focusing, just roll with me. If you're not, I'm hoping you'll enjoy this. So we've got to start off, of course, with a little bit of centering. So just relax yourselves, just settle in wherever you are. Just feel your feet on the ground, Just feel the weight of your body, just sitting there in your chair or wherever you are. Just letting gravity hold your body. Just sensing the shoulders, just the arms just gently hanging, just resting. Maybe just take a breath. Just being aware of your breath. You don't need to do anything to it. And just in your own time, I just want you to just let your awareness just slowly sink down into your torso. So you're not looking for anything in particular, just curious, just sensing down into your torso, chest, stomach, back. Just going to give you a moment just to land there. Just be curious about what feelings are there. Have you got, what have I got? I've got all sorts going on. You might feel a bit of a fluttering somewhere around your heart or maybe in your stomach. Maybe there's some tightness. Is there any tightness anywhere in the torso? Or a part that's particularly warm or a bit cold? Just be curious as to what's there. Okay, so you're in that space. You've got that some sense of what's going on in your body. Now, I just want you to bring someone to mind who you really like, someone you're fond of. So you're just bringing that person to mind. And I want you to notice what's happened in your body when you brought that person to mind. Has anything changed? Just be curious about that. Okay, so I'll just give you a moment just to enjoy that sensation of how that feels when you think of that person. And then very slowly, just in your own time, just feeling the weight of your feet on the floor. Bottom sitting in the chair, your back leaning against it. And if you've had your eyes closed, just let them open now. And bringing your awareness back to this place. Just gently, just in your own time. Okay. I would really like to hear in the chat how that was for you. If nothing happened, that's okay. But maybe something did happen. Maybe you've sensed it. Maybe you felt something. So just if you can just tap in this in the chat box, how was that for you? Okay. Oh, there's lots coming in. Super. I'm gonna have a quick peep in the chat box and see. Marvelous. Okay, Beth, my hands tingles and sense energy move up my arms. Freedom wants to start moving. Brilliant. So actually, we just did a fairly classic focusing exercise. You can also do what's called whole body focusing, where you're moving about. So this is has all sorts of my body wants more attention. Hey, yeah, everybody's body probably wants more attention. When you do that, there's kind of like you're sensing in, you're just sensed into your embodied knowing. That's why we did that. That's what that was about. Your heart got warm when thinking about that special. Your heart filled wide open. Lovely. Okay. Great. Feeling more alive. Wonderful. Lots of really rich experiences coming up for people there. So, what's happening? What's happening? What we just did, you were initially, you're sitting here, you're watching, listening to me. I'm telling you all sorts of stuff. You're listening to my voice. You were probably quite up here in your head. And then I said, whoa, let's try this. Let's kind of let the awareness sink down into the body. And you shifted your awareness down into here. And things changed. Things happened. You were then in touch with your embodied knowing at some level. So this brings me to my slides. I want to talk you through a little bit about what I think is going on when we do this. So there we have it. I'm just going to there we go, too quickly. So a little bit of a brief touch in on some of the history of the whole mind-body thing. And if you want a really good introduction to this, Alina Rhoda, who's my assistant today, did a talk yesterday talking about where the whole sense of disembodiment came from. So what I'm doing here is like a tiny, tiny summary of what Alina did yesterday. So if you want more on that, and it'll flesh out what I'm talking about here, really, really worth checking that out. So the first slide, this is my kind of summing up of what René Descartes said in one image. So René Descartes, he said, well, there's this thing called mind. It's this weird kind of floaty stuff. It's not material at all. And then there's this body thing we've got, this kind of solid, it's a bit crap really. it's not very important. I won't get into a thing about Descartes, I do tend to. So he split, this is the key thing, he split off the body from the mind. There's a big gap here, they're different things, they're not connected at all. Okay, obviously, as you've just sensed, that's nonsense. Going forward a long way, we're going to skip a lot of history here. Sigmund Freud, much better, great improvement. Freud actually appreciated the fact that the mind and the body are very much connected. He didn't do a huge amount about the body, but he really got the fact that they're connected. And he talked about the conscious, which I've been talking about in terms of explicit knowing and kind of the everyday awareness we have. Preconscious, which is the bit that lies just underneath it. And that, I'll be coming back to that. How much to go into psychological theory. There's something called the preconscious. It's those thoughts that hover just under awareness and pop up into your conscious awareness now and again. Just they hover there and they pop up, and then underneath that there's the proper unconscious, which, excuse my I realized this morning we misspelled unconscious, but you know what we're talking about, so we'll move swiftly on. There's the embodied pathways of connection again, which we were just mentioning, and this is what I call the cognitive iceberg. Now bear with me, because I don't want to get too nerdy with this, but I need to get a little bit, because this is I'm trying to explain in cognitive neuroscience terms what just went on, but I'll keep it as kind of straightforward as I can. So as we just saw with the last two slides, the key thing wrong with those is the fact that it pretends or imagines that the body's discrete. that the skin bag is somehow kind of got walls around it. It hasn't. One of the things I discovered in my PhD, and I was looking at anthropologists, sociologists, cognitive neuroscientists, philosophers, psychologists. I read loads of stuff from all many different areas as I could, who were talking about embodied knowing. There was a consistent point that kept coming out that our bodies, and this triangle here is kind of a illustration of our embodiment, it's connected out into the local environment, it's connected out into other people. There's a whole load of stuff I could talk about here. There's something called emotional contagion that you might have heard about. If you're in a room with somebody and somebody in that room is feeling a bit down, you will pick up on that and you will tend to feel a little bit down as well. Yeah, this is scientifically demonstrated. Same goes the other way. If you're hanging out with people who are feeling good, you will pick up that as well. So you are not this little enclosed thing like René Descartes and even Freud suggested. There's gaps. Yeah, there's gaps. But the thing is, and this is crucial, we normally occupy this bit up the top. And when we're in this bit up the top here, our everyday awareness, when you're out shopping, when you're on your phone or you're looking at your computer, or a lot of the time, we're up here. And when you're up here, it looks like there's a wall and you're not connected. Yeah. It's not the reality, but that's how it feels. And I'll drop in at this point that if you're feeling anxious or if you're feeling depressed, you're up here, right? Really, really up here, really tight in that middle bit there. You're feeling completely disconnected from everybody and everything. You are not in touch with all this goodness down here. You are not in touch with all this. You're up here in this little circle feeling completely isolated. Yeah, it's horrible. But it can be overcome. That's the key thing. And I'll be touching on that again when we come on to if there's time on some of the therapeutic stuff. So down here, there you go, there's everyday awareness up here. What we just did a moment ago, we were sensing down from here through this little wavy line here into what Gendling calls our felt senses. That's what focusing is all about. You're going, ah, what's here? The person that had the tingly hands, the person that had the warmth in the heart. Those are what are called felt senses in focusing. And they sit just here, just beneath the level of awareness. And it was really easy, hopefully, for you to just go, oh, let's just dip down. Let's go down into here. Yeah, that's what we just did. There we go. So that's that. And when you're focusing, you're getting this awareness coming into here, and you can then start to access all this goodness down here. This is the area of what's called extended cognition. I am getting a little bit nerdy now. Extended cognition, if you look up, Raymond Gibbs is excellent on this. If you want some really good juicy stuff about extended cognition, Rolly McCrady and the Heart Math Institute are working in a similar area here. We don't think purely with this kind of cut off brain up here, right? Cognition is embodied, cognition is extended, fact, right? That's just a reality. And that's what's going on here. We can then connect out into the wider world and sense into how other people are feeling as well. And if you're in nature, you're sensing into the other than human world. Okay, I'm getting a little ahead of myself here. I'm not going to go very much into what I call, well, it's actually from a book called, Lakoff and Johnson. Sorry, a moment there. Lakoff and Johnson, two very powerful, fascinating theory about embodied cognition. They talk about the cognitive unconscious, which is right down the bottom. It's pretty hard to access that, really quite hard. Ritual can do it. But I'm not going to go too much into that now because we're running out of time. So if you're really going deep with one of the pathways of connection, classically, if you're taking a psychedelic, that wavy line here moves down or can begin to kind of disappear altogether. And then your awareness is down here. Yeah, it's opened up. You're now in touch with all this, and you can get a real sense of all of these gaps here and the fact that you are connected. Yeah, we're back with that Thich Nhat Hanh quote. We suddenly realize, I'm not separate at all. This is a lovely quote. A guy called De Quincey, philosopher of consciousness. We are constituted by webs of interconnection. Relationship comes first, and we emerge as more or less distinct centers within a vast and complex networks that surround us. So I'm going to stop screen sharing. There's a couple of quotes I really wanted to share with you. If I can just access them. Goodness. So John Danvers, who was speaking, goodness, was it yesterday? A lifelong practitioner of Zen meditation. He has a lovely description of the experience when mindfulness allowed his fixed sense of self to dissolve. And I'm quoting here from his book. The egocentric unitary I wasn't there. Instead, a different state of being was at work or at play, as if the edges of myself were dissolved into the surrounding space. It felt like there was no separation between me and the world. What John is describing there is what I've just shown you on the cognitive iceberg. His awareness through Zen meditation sinks down into the body and then opens out into the world, and that sense of the self, the edges of the self disappear. Another quote, Claire Thompson, who presented this conference about mindfulness in nature, describes her experience of watching a dramatically beautiful sunrise. I didn't realize until afterwards, but my sense of self was absent. I was simply absorbed by the intrinsic wonder of the view and intimately involved in deep contemplation of the pure grace and delicate beauty of nature. I was an integral part of the scene. I could spend the next 20 minutes giving you quotes like that, because everybody who walks on the pathways of connection are going to have experiences like that. I did have some more, but I really want us to move on and have some time for questions, which we've got. I just want to close with, because it's again very pertinent and draws in the therapeutic side a little bit. I've mentioned that psychedelics are hugely powerful, and there's something emerging now, which I'm very excited about and going to get more involved with, which is psychedelic therapy. And one of the key researchers in this, Ros Watts, did a paper about how psychedelic therapy using psilocybin mushrooms, how it works. One of the key processes behind how psychedelic therapy works is a shift from disconnection from self, others and the world to connection. Again, that same theme. It's about connection. And that connection comes from when the embodied process of connection allows to shift our awareness into the deep embodied self, blurring the boundary of the skin enclosed body and enabling a flow of information between what we usually think of as self and the other. And ultimately, this makes nonsense of both of those ideas of self and other. We just enter into this extraordinary space of unity. I'm going to stop, I think, at that point. I had a lot more I was going to say, but I'd really love to hear some questions. Let's see what we've got. Oh, specific reference, Glendon Clough. I will. It's in his book, Focusing. It's his first book. Really very, very good. For the kind of the absolute, the words of the master, Eugene Gendlin's book, Focusing, is very good. If you want to experience and practice focusing, I would recommend The Power of Focusing by Ann Wiser Cornell. It's fabulous. How do counselors and therapists, boards and regulations see the work I do? Great, interesting question. Do you know, when we get back, this is close to the question, if the self is not fixed, if the boundary isn't blurred, then how can you be separate as a therapist? Such a lovely question. So here's the thing. So if you remember the cognitive iceberg, so we've got these two, we've got this triangle with the awareness bit at the top. So when I'm working with a client, it's like there's two of these triangles, these cognitive icebergs next to each other. So what I'm doing, I'm sitting with my client, or we're out in nature somewhere. I'm holding this self-awareness and I'm sinking down a little bit, like you did when you were focusing, into my body. And I'm going, oh, what's going on here? What's happening for me? I'm sensing into my embodied knowing of what's happening for me. I'm sensing into the embodied knowing of what's happening between the two of us. And sometimes, really genuinely, I can sense into the embodied knowing of what's going on for them because of that blurring, that emotional contagion I was talking about. And that means I can sometimes say, oh, okay, I'm feeling really a heaviness in my heart. I'm wondering if that's there for you. And they'll go, oh, wow, yeah, I've got that too. Oh, and then they can connect because I've kind of gone, is that there? And they've gone, well, yeah, it is. Yeah. So that's probably, so the boards don't, they're not bothered really what about what I'm doing. They're on board. Is it possible to have a psychedelic experience without saying psychedelic? Oh, definitely. There's something called a contact high. And again, what a lovely example of how the EPOC work. So if you're with somebody or a group of people, you're a group of people, they're all taking some sort of psychedelic and you haven't, there's a very good chance that you will begin to have a similar experience. Well, that's now given, hopefully you're going, well, of course you would, because we're all connected. They're all connected, you are connected with them, so you're picking up on that. I called Shulgin has done talked a bit about the contact high. If you've taken any psychedelics, you're pretty familiar with that. Okay, that's the three questions. Are any more in the
it wasn't that a question from someone, can I raise it to you? It was in the chat. So please say something about psychedelics for people who have issues with substance abuse.
Yeah, this came up. I didn't reference the Sam Gandy talk yesterday. He was talking about this. This same question came up. There is actually a substance, a psychedelic called Ibogaine. And there's been some really interesting research on that as specifically as a way of helping people to overcome addictions. And the key thing here is, if we're talking about something like, okay, I'll go with the classic, something like heroin or alcohol, right? Alcohol and heroin are not are not pathways to connection, right? They're numbing. Alcohol numbs your connection. It doesn't open it up. Psilocybin will open up. So they're working in different ways. So that, I think that's probably the key to that question. We're talking about a different kind of thing. Go very carefully with this. I mean, don't go and find somebody who does psychedelic therapy. Talk them through and work with it. Mindfulness is also a brilliant way of tackling addiction. In fact, any of the EPOC will be really, really helpful, okay? Because it's going to connect you to what's going on in here. You're going to get a deeper understanding and you're going to connect to the bigger world. And if you're suffering from addiction, you're suffering from disconnection. And whether that's addiction to consumer goods, alcohol, or some drug, whatever it is, that's about disconnection. So that's... Oh, goodness gracious. My battery's running low. Glorious. That's good timing, isn't it? Well, we're just about on time, aren't we? Were there any more questions?
No, just a lot of remarks in the chat we can share with you later.
Great. Okay. So just, I suppose, just to sum up, really, the EPOC, I hope I've woven together the strands of this conference into a bit of a tapestry to help you to understand that all of these dance, mindfulness, focusing, all come together and they're all different pathways. Go with the one that works for you. If we combine them, that gets really interesting too. If you start doing mindfulness in nature, that's really exciting. If you're using psychedelics in nature, that's hugely powerful. So yeah, dancing. Stephanie Gottlob, I was going to mention, if you want to see what happens when you go out in nature and dance, check out Stephanie Gottlob's work because it's absolutely lovely. So, and...
Adrian, there's someone who wanted to know the specific reference to Eugene Genlin quote. Is that the one from 1981?
It is, yes. If you want to drop that in.
I did it, yeah. And then the two extended cognition specialists, one of them is Roland McCrady, right? And the other one was?
Yeah, the guys, there's a book by, oh goodness, I'm trying to think. William McCrady is very good, Heart Math. I'll tell you what, I'll put a post to my blog in the chat box. There's loads of stuff in there because I'll be off giving you half a dozen different references and you're going to get lost in it. Andy Clark's very good, actually. He's very interesting. He's a philosopher, but he draws a lot on cognitive neuroscience, and he's the guy that talks about the skin bag body. I suppose just to round this up, there's two of our conference speakers who I particularly admire, Philip Shepherd and David Abraham. Both of them talk about this place that the EPOC leads to. I would say, Philip might disagree, Philip names it, talks about radical wholeness. And that's kind of what I'm talking about. And David Abraham might talk about participatory perception. But for me, the place that we're going to is characterized by a particular kind of embodied knowing, which I talk about as the wisdom of the body. A sense and awareness that all things are ultimately one. And that our sense of separation, as Thich Nhat Hanh said in that opening quote, is actually an illusion. So, let's have a quick look in the chat. Is there anything else there that... if there's any questions coming up, I will... microdosing. Yeah. I think it can be useful. There things a lot more research need to be done on microdosing, really. But again, look at the Sam Gandy talk. He does reference that specifically. So I could, to close, I could reference some of the other many people. We're talking to Francesca Macon-Boring was talking about family constellations work, which is quite ritualistic. So that's the way ritual comes into this. The guy microdosing, Sam Gandy, he did a talk for us a couple of days ago. So the cognitive iceberg, it's all in my thesis. I must give you a post for that. Dancing in Nature, that's Stephanie Gottlob. She did a presentation a few days ago. So what I've been trying to do throughout is to weave together, we've had such richness on this channel, trying to weave together some of this into a coherent whole. So I hope I've managed to do that for you. I should call that quits, I think. I could say much more. We've only got another couple of minutes, so I don't want to start off on another theme. So thanks very much for coming. I hope you enjoyed that. My blog, Body Mind Place, has got loads more on this, so check that out. I'm working on a book at the moment, so a year or so. There'll be chapters on each of the embodied pathways of connection, all of which I have walked and will continue to do so.
Thank you so much, Adrian. This was brilliant. I can really feel that the participants, the attendees, enjoyed it. Alina and I really enjoyed it too. You gave an excellent overview. You did it in, you know, you connected really to us. So that was really brilliant. Thank you so, so much. Thank you for all the attendees for joining. We really appreciated your presence. Oh, you get so much feedback, Adrian. Thank you so much for your inspiring presence. Amazing. So we really loved it. Yeah, so for everyone here,
you
can still watch this talk for 48 hours live on the portal. We also added it on Facebook, so please do not hesitate to share it with your friends and family. This is a really amazing talk, so spread the word as much as you can. And join the coffee breakout rooms for more inspiration. You can, you know, connect to others, exchange, share about your ideas, projects, and etc. We also have an ecology and research Facebook group. So join us there, because we will post more about some other amazing talks we will have this afternoon. So do not forget, we have this afternoon at morning, because we are still morning. We have a talk with Sarah Ryan on The Wild Walk Home, Exploring the Vitality of the Body and the Living World at 10 a.m. UK time. Then we have a talk with Dr. Thania Acheron about this embodied decision-making, crucial life transitions. And then Ronnie George at 2 p.m. Ancestral Reconnection. Olive Bieringa at 4 p.m., Ecosomatic Practices for Living and Dying, and then Ebony McNichols, the Africanist Aesthetic and Movement Observation. So please do join us. Those talks are really amazing. The presenters are really, you know, very knowledgeable in these areas. Yeah, so that's about it. Do not hesitate to buy the library, because it gives you a lifelong access. So enough time to digest all this wonderful content, because it is a lot to digest. And I think you do not want to miss on any of those talks. We even created learning lists to navigate you through all this complex content, so you can actually make it a real learning experience. And do not forget to buy it today, because the price is going to double up after the conference. Yeah, so if you have any concerns or anything you want to know more, contact us and we can help you to navigate through this. Thank you again, Adrian. This was brilliant. I really enjoyed it. And I think I'm not the only one. The feedback was just amazing. We had a lot of attendees, and you know, everybody seemed to have really enjoyed it.
I'm so glad to have shared this. I'm not exaggerating when I say this is my life's work. Okay, so I just managed to fit it into less than 50 minutes. So
yeah, very difficult
for being there. Much
appreciated. Well, I can really certify Adrian is very passionate about this. I mean, I've been working with Adrian for 6 past months, and you know, I can really feel his passion, and I think you actually transmitted it on me too. So who knows? It's contagious, you know, your passion. Okay, so definitely. Thank you very much.
But I'm super curious still. Adrian, what is your top tip for being embodied? Oh, wow. Yes.
Awareness. Awareness, right?
Yeah. Thank you, Alina.
Self-awareness. If you haven't got self-awareness, you ain't going anywhere. So self-awareness, that's my top tip. Self-awareness, get connected, sense into what's going on down here. Really, honestly, if you don't have awareness of what's happening, then you can't do anything about it, right? If I'm feeling stressed, but I know I'm feeling stressed, I can do something about it, yeah? If I don't even get it, you're on, you know, that's where the trouble starts. So that's my top tip.
Thank you so much for sharing.
Thanks,
this. Sorry, I almost admitted it. Thank you, Alina, for being my rock here. So do not forget to, you know, tap into your body and, you know, be aware of all your senses and go deeper in. Thank you so much, Adrian. This was wonderful. And thank you for everyone for joining.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you, everyone.
See you next time.
Thank you.